Hello everyone and welcome back to Mound Talk with Sioux City Explorers Manager Steve Montgomery. Mound Talk is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux City Manager questions about the Explorers, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Steve's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Steve talks to us about the impressive play of Nate Sampson. He tells us who he's worried about in the Central Division of the American Association. And is there a food that Steve loves so much that he could win an eating contest? Let's find out on Mound Talk.
We want to welcome back Manager Steve Montgomery. Steve, do you have team updates you'd like to provide for us?
We signed a new guy by the name of Dre Gleason. Dre is out of Austin Peay University. We've had a rash of injuries hit us a little bit. We got Michael Lang back last night versus the last game of the three-game set versus St. Paul. So we're happy to have Michael back. And we transferred Brandon Alvarez to the disabled list. He has a left-hand injury. And, we're looking at signing a young kid today out of Texas A&M University by the name of Joel Davis. We'll be signing him today in Kansas City. And just to give us an extra body just in case, you get that rare injury or in our case, seems like prominent injury because we've had a rash of them. But, just trying to get everybody back and get everybody healthy.
Now, you had mentioned about St. Paul. You guys take 4 out of 6 from them. What does that do for the confidence of your team at this point?
Well, I just think it's just a series win. I mean, obviously, we know the reputation St. Paul has and how good they are. And George does a great job with the Saints. It's just... we just played good against them. It was what I take from it. The 2 losses in the series have come against what I feel is a true number one starter in Mark Hamburger. And, we've been able to hit them and get base hits. We just haven't been able to turn those hits into runs. And, just moving forward, we just got to figure out a way. We came off a real disappointing 3-game sweep to the Kansas City T-Bones, another good quality team. And, we needed to right the ship and get back to the winning ways. And, we were very fortunate to win, a couple of mistakes and they opened the door for us and we kind of took advantage. So, just hopefully that momentum carries into our next series.
The one thing I found really interesting about your team is you have battled through a lot of injuries. And although his numbers aren't as good as last year, boy, Nate Sampson has really stepped up for you this year. Having an MVP-type season again.
He's, in my opinion, the most valuable player in this league because he plays the most demanding position, and that's being shortstop. He also does a great job at nurturing the young players, and he spends a lot of time on the field with the young players, talking to them about how to be a pro and, stuff that off the field, people don't see. On the field is the utmost professional, but off the field is where Nate's real value is, spending the time in the clubhouse, being a clubhouse presence, teaching the young players how to be a professional and how to prepare every single day. He comes in, he's very diligent in his preparation, and we're just very, very fortunate to have a player like Nate Sampson in the Sioux City Explorers uniform.
One thing I have to say about him, really smart young man too, and the example I use on this is when you guys were playing St. Paul about a month ago, you were forced to play one of your pitchers in the DH spot because you had some injuries, and he was given a strikeout on, I thought was really kind of off the plate, and he was going to argue that, and you could almost see in his mind that he was thinking to himself, I can't get ejected right here, We don't have anybody to replace me. I just, the really bright, bright guy for sure.
Yeah. The baseball IQ is off the chart. There has been times where, we have adjusted things due to what Nate has seen. And that's with as far as a scouting report goes. Nate will see something out of short that a hitter's doing and stuff like that. We come in, we talk, and maybe we adjust the scouting report or adjust how we're attacking somebody or he sees something and such. He's just obviously being around the game since he's been 18 years old and, he's been, I think, 11 years professionally. I mean, it's just a treat to be around. And, like I said, we're just very, very fortunate to have him. And, you know, the type of years he's put up, obviously the numbers speak for themselves.
Kramer Snead has put two victories for you here. Do you see him kind of returning to that 2015 form?
Well, every time out, we're trying to be patient. And every time out, we signed him obviously because we had a need when James Needy was picked up by the Marlins. And we knew he was close and we knew he could come in and pitch. And obviously there's some upside to him. Every time out, he's getting a little more velocity back on his fastball. And that's the biggest thing that I saw when he started with us and had the first two starts that were very, very rough. And, you know, had it been normal where you didn't see the velocity increasing, you know, he might be on the outside looking in right now. But, you know, every time up, he was up to 88 miles an hour in his last start versus St. Paul. It's not sitting consistently there, but he's touching that. And with the off-speed stuff, he's able to throw any time at any count. He's really being and that was the Kramer Snead of 2015, where, you know, he was 88 to 90 miles an hour, keeping the ball down. But, you know, it's kind of like Nolan Ryan when he fell, but it was the curveball that was pulverizing the hitters. And that's a little bit of what Kramer does. It keeps you off balance with the off-speed stuff. And if we can, you know, keep him on track and keep the velocity coming back, I mean, maybe we could recapture 2015.
Yesterday, the All-Star team is named. Nate Sampson was the only player on your team who was chosen. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it's a little surprising. I thought, there's a case for two other guys on our team. I thought, Tony Campana, I think, is the best center fielder in the league. You know, you can't go wrong with Harrison Kane with the offensive numbers he's putting up. But Hobbs Johnson, you know, he's in the top 10. He doesn't have the win totals, but as a starting pitcher, you can't control the win totals. He's in the top 10 in ERA. And then the closer I thought was really deserving, P.J. Francescon. You know, he picked up his 11th save of the season last night. I believe he's under a 1.5 ERA. Not your typical closer, not going to come in there throwing the ball 96, 97 miles an hour, but really knows what he's doing on the mound, pitches, has a plus changeup, and, you know, gets his breaking ball over when he needs it and locates the fastball. So I thought those three guys were deserving, but, you can make a case for a lot of people. I mean, you just look at St. Paul's Brady Shoemaker, Chris Jacobs out of Sioux Falls. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were deserving that were left off this team.
Well, let's head to fan questions this week. We first of all begin with Sean from Jefferson. He would like to know who you see as the biggest competition to you in winning the Central Division.
All four teams, to be honest. I think all four managers are very good. All four teams are very good. It's gonna come down to, in my opinion, schedule, who you're playing. If somebody can get hot, and rattle off, two back-to-back weeks where you go 8-10 and you go 16-4 in a two-week stretch. I mean, you know, or in a 20-game stretch. So, I think each of them pose a different style. Kansas City, obviously, we're heading there now. Small ballpark, really inducive to power from the right-handed side. And then you flip that and you go to Gary where there's a force field over top of the field and you can't get any balls out of there. So, it's really, I believe it comes down to schedule and really who can get hot. If you had to rank the teams, I like my chances. I like my team. I also like Kansas City's team. Lincoln's on a little bit of a downward spiral right now, but, you know, Bobby will right the ship and make the necessary moves to get in. And, you know, Gary's like a box of chocolates. You don't know which one you're going to get. You're going to get the team that scores 8 runs, or you're going to get the team that, you know, sneaks one out 2-1. And, you know, they got a true number one in Charlie Rosario, so, and they're on a 4-man rotation. So you don't see long losing streaks, you know, with Charlie in the rotation.
Craig from Winnipeg has a couple of questions for you. The first one is, how would you compare the rivalry between Sioux City and Sioux Falls to that of Fargo-Moorhead and Winnipeg?
Obviously Sioux City and Sioux Falls is a little closer. It's an hour and 20 minutes, and But as far as the rivalry goes, you know, I in the Sioux City Sioux Falls one, I think it's more of a city pride thing, you know, because they are so close. And with the Fargo and Winnipeg, for years it was really the two best teams in the Northern League going at it, and there was different things that were involved in that Winnipeg-Fargo rivalry, where, you know, Doug was the manager in Winnipeg and then, you know, said some bad things in the media about the Winnipeg fans. And, you know, there's no love loss for Doug up in Winnipeg. I'll just say that. And, you know, there's been some bench-clearing brawls back in the days and you know, fights on the field and, you know, not getting along and players. But really, nowadays, the players really get along more so than they did back when I played and back when the old Northern League was around. The players are more friendly off the field with each other. You know, they've played a lot against each other a lot more. And there's nothing like a Fargo-Winnipeg game, especially when the, you know, the division title's on the line. Back in the old Northern days and stuff, but you know, St. Paul's pretty much since the move into the American Association over the course of the last 3 or 4 years, St. Paul's kind of ran away with that division and hit a little bit. You know, Sioux Falls and Sioux City, like I said, I think it's more of a city thing since they're so close and a lot of people know each other from those cities. So I think it's more of a rivalry with the fans as far as that, but on the field, I mean, you know, there was no love lost between Fargo and Winnipeg.
Craig would also like to know, he says, now that the Explorers have won back-to-back Central Division titles, how much easier is it for you to recruit players to come to Sioux City as opposed to when you first took over?
Well, I don't think obviously players want to win. I think once they get into the uniform, per se, but as far as the recruiting of the players, the players don't really ask too much. We tell them that we've been to the playoffs the last 2 years and such, but the players and the agents want to know what it comes down to is how many players you've moved. That's the bottom line. That's why we're able to get some of the players that we've gotten over the course of the last couple of years is because of the volume of players that we're moving out of here. I think we're at 13 or 14 players since the end of the 2015 season. And when you think about that, you're carrying 22 guys. That's a lot of players, and, you know, we're fortunate to have some of those players in a Sioux City uniform. And, you know, we've already moved two guys this year since the season started, and prior to the season we moved another three more. Two guys that we had signed to be on this team actually ended up getting picked up. So, you know, it's more about the player movement and doing what's right by these kids and trying to get them another chance. And when it comes down to it, that's what they really want to know. When they get here, obviously they want to win.
Am I correct also that it's about the fact that the players looking for what kind of manager you are and how much opportunity you're giving them as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. I tell guys straight up, I'm not going to lie to you on the phone. I'm not going to, you know, blow wind at you or whatever the term is. I'm gonna tell you that, you know, like for instance, when Joe Benny came in, Joe Benny, you're coming in to be my everyday second baseman. That's what I tell him, and you know, that's what he does. And until he, you know, loses the job, that's what he is gonna be. He's gonna be my everyday second baseman. So, you know, when the guys come in, they need to play, they need to put up numbers so that they have another opportunity to get back to a major league team.
Tyler from South Sioux City asks, he says, I remember when the Warriors set the NBA record for wins, they talked about how empty that seemed because they did not win at all. Did you feel that way after the 2015 season?
Oh, absolutely. I always say the best teams don't always win the championship because in a short series, it's very, very hard to win it. Really, if you think about it, all you got to do is play 600 baseball over a course of 10 days and you win a championship. I always feel like it's harder to get in the playoffs than it is to actually win it. But to answer the question directly, absolutely. I remember sitting in that locker room, you know, for probably till about 2 or 3 in the morning, just thinking how did we not win this and stuff. But, you know, now you look back at it, it's 2017. The guy who personally beat us is pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals right now. So, John Brebbia, what he did in that series was absolutely phenomenal, pitching 3 innings, 4 innings, and 3 innings in games 2, 3, and 4, respectively, and not losing a mile per hour off his fastball. Just amazing. But definitely an empty feeling, and, you know, a feeling that you don't want to have too often, but, you're going to have it more often than not.
Dave, the former pitcher, asks, he says, so with so many teams turning to pitching coaches as their managers, isn't there something to be said for how much smarter pitchers are than other players?
We like to think so, that's for sure. But, I've always seen the great managers be catchers because all the catchers have everything in front of them. And they're seeing the game at a different angle than what other players see it. They're all looking in at the catcher, the catcher's looking out. So you see a lot of your great managers being catchers, but I think you're going more so the pitching coach. You know, coaches, seems like pitching coaches are staying around longer. And when you stay around longer, you kind of understand what independent baseball is about. You start learning from the manager that you're under, and you start helping him recruit. You start helping the organization build teams year in and year out, and it kind of leads into if you want to be a manager. My pitching coach, I think, is second to none in this league, and Bobby Post, I think he's the best one out there. But he has no ambition to manage. He just likes being the pitching coach. But when I get ejected, I have no problem turning it over to Bobby because I have a lot of trust in him.
Ian from Sioux City asks, he says, the one thing I like about independent baseball is that there doesn't seem to be the showing up of one another. No beanballs, bat flips, bench clearing brawls, but everyone is still just as competitive. This is the way baseball was meant to be played.
There's still a little bit of stuff that goes on in a game, but with the limited rosters is why you don't see it too much. I think that we understand as managers that we can't afford to have anybody get hurt in one of those, bean balls or bench clearing brawls and stuff like that, and we can't afford to be suspended and let's be honest, if you're in one of those situations, you're going to get fined from the league, you're going to get suspended, and these guys aren't making a lot of money anyways to be fined and suspended. So I think that's why it's dulled down a little bit, because of the suspensions and the fines and the limited rosters.
We have a couple of baseball kind of skills kind of questions for you. First of all is one from a person identifying himself as Frustrated Dad. He says, I've been getting on my son because he has been lazy about not running out every ball that he hits. His explanation is that if he knows he's getting out, then why burn the extra energy? He's dead wrong, right?
Right. Absolutely wrong. Because when you hit it, you don't know if you're going to be out or not. There's no reason to not run the ball out. I tell my players, even at this level, that, and this is professional, so they're collecting a paycheck, that I'm paying you as a hitter to run as hard as you can for 30 yards 4 times a game. So there's no excuse for it. I have a 13-year-old and I have a 9-year-old, and that's one thing that I don't tolerate is lack of effort, because what if they bobble the ball? If they bobble the ball and you're not hustling, you're still going to be out. But if you bobble the ball and you're hustling, then you're safe. Now you start rallies that way, you start big innings that way. So, there's two things I always say this, there's two things you can control in baseball, two things only, and that's your effort and your attitude. So you got to have effort. You got to run every ball as hard as you can to first base, out of the box, and try to put pressure on the defense.
Bruce would like to know, with all the talk about protecting kids' arms, what do you think is a good age to start throwing curveballs?
Well, I'll use my son as an example. We started throwing curveballs, and everybody's going to cringe at this, at 9 years old. But we didn't throw them in games at 9 years old. All I tried to do was teach him how to throw a curveball properly. And then being his coach in travel baseball, would throw maybe one or two per game just so he learned how to spin a baseball. There's a lot of players that don't learn, or they're protected till they're 16 or 17 years old and they have a plus arm, but they don't know how to spin a breaking ball, and it could be too late. So I'm a proponent of teaching them how to throw a curveball properly, but then not throwing it in the games, just limiting it to maybe, you know, playing catch. Because here's what I said about that. My son, I can't have my eyeballs on my son all the time, and I can't see what he's doing in the backyard when he's playing catch with his friends. Well, guess what they're doing? They're throwing knuckleballs and they're throwing curveballs to each other. So I always felt that if I showed them how to throw it properly and the chance of arm injury is lower that way, because he knows how to throw it properly.
You know, I've always wondered about that in comparison to kids that are coming from, like, let's say the Dominican or Puerto Rico or something, where they're throwing curveballs earlier. And is this really hurting American players when they aren't given that opportunity?
Well, I think, like I said, you have to learn how to spin a baseball. You know, a guy that comes to mind to me, and, you know, a guy that, I mean, I have a lot of respect for, and he's no longer with us, is Jake Labor. Jake Labor, I was his pitching coach at North Dakota State. I was his pitching coach for the Redhawks for years. And what kept him from moving on to a major league team was the lack of ability to spin a breaking ball and put a breaking ball where he wanted to at any time in the count. Had he been able to do that, I think the sky was the limit for Jake Labor, and we'd have been seeing him play on television. But you know, he kind of got around it, and it was one of his inconsistent pitches. But he could put his fastball anywhere he wanted to. If he was able to put that breaking ball anywhere he wanted to, we probably would have saw him on TV for years.
Jenny from Hinton would like to know if you offer training where kids can come and learn techniques from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, we put on a free clinic once a month to, you know, anybody who comes out. We have players and coaches, and we put on a free baseball clinic one time a month. And if you're looking for, you know, personal or private lessons and one-on-one, you can call our front office and just, you know, ask our general manager, Shane Tritz, if, you know, you're wanting to get, you know, personal one-on-one attention. And yeah, I mean, I got no problem giving back to the community. Absolutely. Just call the front office and we'll set something up.
Gina from Brookdale asked, she says she found your discussion of how you kept in contact with your children interesting. She's wondering how you handle the discipline aspect of your children. Are you able to do that, or does your wife always have to take on that role?
I still discipline. I discipline through FaceTime. It happened late last night after our game, you know, where you got a call and they're not wanting to go to bed because, you know, it's not a school night now, and they got to get to bed. And, you know, your wife has tired and needs to go to bed as well. So yeah, there's still disciplining going on. You know, I'm like my wife explains a lot of times, it's almost like I'm a novelty because I'm gone for 4 or 5 months. So you know, the disciplinarian, when I'm there, I'm definitely the disciplinarian, and they listen to me a lot more than their mom. They know that they can get away with a little bit more than with me. But yeah, it's harder to discipline over the phone because you're not there. But you know, I don't like to hit my kids and stuff like that. But you know, sometimes it might, you know might call for a slap on the butt or something like that. But normally when I raise my voice, the message gets sent. So there's sometimes through FaceTime that I have to raise my voice and get their attention. And you know, it just happened that last night was one of those nights.
I bet if you gave that look you give when you step out on the field, that would be enough to deter behavior.
They can tell. yeah, like I said, it's a switch that flipped when I walk in the baseball, and there's a switch that I flip, you know, when I've had enough, and they kind of know that look, and when that look kind of happens at the house, people start walking around a little bit on eggshells, and it's a good thing. But for the most part, we have two pretty good kids that are highly active in sports, and we couldn't be more proud.
So our last question for you this week is from Gerald from Sioux City. He says, Steve, I love those eating contests that they have during the 4th of July. Is there one of those contests that you could win?
Ah, man. You know, you would think that I'm a pretty big eater, but I really am not a big eater. But if there was an eating competition out there that I could probably do damage, and it's I have a bad sweet tooth. Like really bad, and I absolutely love Reese's peanut butter cups, and I could probably do some damage on some peanut butter cups. But as far as like wings and, you know, like there's wings eating competitions and stuff like that, I mean, I eat 14, 15 wings and I'm full, and the sweet tooth, you know, like a cheesecake or something like that, I could probably hold my own. But you know, the 70-some hot dogs that Joey Chestnut put down on July 4th, I mean, that's just impressive. And I don't even know what to say about it. I couldn't even fathom eating that much. And just the preparation to eat that much has to be super intense. So, but if it, one eating competition I could do, probably Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Steve.
All right, I appreciate you having me.
We want to thank Manager Steve Montgomery for joining us on Mound Talk this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux City Manager, please send them to us at asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give Steve a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Panier, the Managing Editor of the Minor League Sports Report. We'll see you next time on Mound Talk.